All right, good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, also please silence your cell phones. We also respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are going to do steps 5, 6, and 7.
Yes.
Yeah. Fasten your seatbelts. I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Graham.
And it's good to be here tonight. Good to be sober. And it's good to be in an AA meeting with you guys. David and I started this thing up in his house, this actual meeting, a few months ago. And it just came out of a simple desire to actually sit down in a group and look at what the book says about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, to try and look at the directions and to share our experience, strength, and hope on those directions as we've experienced them in our life. And really to try and do what we do at Starbucks when we meet guys and sit down with them, just to try and do it in a meeting. And we're certainly not here to teach anybody about the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's lots of people here that know much more about it than us. We're really just here to share our experience, strength, and hope. So anyway, having said that, we're doing 3 steps tonight. Like David said, we're not messing around. And the reason we're doing these 3 steps is when we look at the directions in the book, the book does devote some time to step 5, but step 6 and 7, it pretty much hustles through them. And so we're going to do exactly the same. So we're going to start off the reading tonight on page 72. And it's just that paragraph that says, having made our personal inventory. So it's actually the start of chapter 6, Into Action, page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So, there's a little recap at the beginning. I've done my fourth step, and going back, you know, we've identified that on my own, once I start to drink, I can't guarantee my behaviour. I usually drink too much. I also can't stay stopped. I can stop drinking, I can't stay stopped. And I came to AA to believe that AA could work for me too. And then I made a decision to take the rest of the steps and to do what the people in AA were doing. And then I took an inventory, and we really were told at that point that my problem is selfishness. It's not really drinking. Drinking's a symptom of the problem. The problem is within me. And it's a selfishness which manifests in three ways that destroy me. Resentment, fear, and selfish sex conduct. That's the three ways that this selfishness oozes out into my life. And then there's also fear and the sex conduct as well as the resentment. So, we've covered all of that and we made this inventory. And now what are we going to do? So by this point, the inventory I had managed to stretch out as long as possible. So I'm sitting down to write inventory and I suddenly noticed that those windows could do with a wash.
Yes.
I'm sitting down to write inventory and I suddenly remember that the car needs vacuumed, you know, or whatever. Because it's uncomfortable to sit with this stuff. It's very uncomfortable to sit and write this down. And what I want to do is say, well, if it's not bothering me right now, I don't even need to think about it. So we've done all that, and then it says, what are we going to do now? So what happened with me was my first sponsor actually gave me a deadline because I was procrastinating on the fourth step. I wouldn't finish it. So he's like, okay, meet me Saturday. I'll pick you up at 7 a.m. Be ready. So I remember Saturday, 6:45. I'm writing out the last part of my inventory. Greg shows up. We go in his car. And I remember it was snowing that day, and he's sitting, we both smoked filterless cigarettes, and we were sitting there, the snow was coming down in this huge big town car, and we were just sitting smoking, and I was reading out this, what I thought, shameful list to him, and he just sort of sat there, and there was some and so forth. And over time, you know, it was made clear to me that not only was he there, but there was a prayer to be done around this, which we'll look at, which meant that God was there too. You know, whatever God is, it was me, my sponsor, and God. And I really got the chance to get a lot of this stuff out. And for me, a lot of these things were things that had eaten away at me for years. And for me, there was one thing in particular, which was sexual in nature, which I'd done in my early teens, and I was just horrified that anybody would ever find out about this. And I used to think about that every single day. And it just terrified me that people would know about that. And I remember sort of blurting that out and looking down so I couldn't see him when I'm saying it. Because I'm just so terrified. And he's just like, yeah, a lot of people do that. And I'm like, is there anything else? You know. And what actually started to happen during that process is that my isolation and my terminal uniqueness really started to melt away. And I didn't know that's what was happening, but that's what was happening. Because you see, I make all this stuff up in my mind that's not even true about things that I've done. And I'm the worst person in the world. And it just stays with me in my head, and therefore it's the truth, as far as I'm concerned. And to actually sit and talk to someone about it and just get it out there in the light, it really is it's a wonderful experience. And then it talks about hiding things. So I think specifically what this is talking about is me saying, okay, there was that incident with the sheep back in Scotland, and I don't want anybody to know about that because I would look bad. So I'm not going to put it on my fourth step, and I'm certainly not telling that sponsor guy in step five. It's not going on there. No way. That's coming to the grave with me. You know, and that's a facetious example. I didn't really do that. Whatever it is, you know, whatever shameful, dirty, sordid little thing it is, you know, what it's saying is it's important that I bring this to the table. And I've had a couple of guys that I sponsored, and we did step five, and then they came back to me a week or two later and said, you know what, there's this thing I need to tell you about. I just couldn't tell you. And it seems to say as long as I tell somebody about this, that and if I don't, it says that the chances I may get drunk. And I want to very briefly, and then I'll be quiet, I just want to talk about this humility, fearlessness, and honesty. And what I did when I did this step, and I didn't know at the time, is I was learning that this is really the way it's going to be from now on. I'm somebody that cannot live with shameful secrets, things that I do that I know I shouldn't have done. And whether I'm sober and I'm doing those things or whether they happened when I was drunk, I can't live with that. I have an exaggerated sense of guilt. And what these things do is they block me off from people. And I get all wrapped up in it again. I get wrapped up in my alternate reality. And so it's been very, very important. And I only learned this by not doing it. So I did the steps and then stopped telling anybody anything. It all builds up again. It's crazy time. And so over the years I've learned I need some men in recovery, some tight-lipped friends that I can go to with what's really going on in the Graham Show that I don't want anybody else to know behind the curtain. And I need to be honest and say, you know what, you'll never believe what I did. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I believe it. And, you know, it's that feeling of, I've been sober X amount of time, I shouldn't be doing X or whatever, you know. And that's very, very important for me to be honest about that stuff on an ongoing basis. And to tell someone all my life story today, as much as about what happened in the past.
Yeah, I got here, I got sober when I was 28. I got to AA when I was 22. And so it was 6 years for me to take the first part of the first step. You know, I just really did not want to be powerless over alcohol. I did not want to relinquish the management and control of my life. Those were abhorrent ideas to me, as well as the idea that the drinking is not going to be an option. I really wanted drinking to be an option. Somehow, you know, never say never, right? So I just say that because it took a long time for me to just finally throw in the towel and say, you know what, you guys are right. When I start, I can't stop, and when I stop, I'm absolutely miserable, and the clock's ticking until my next drink. I get it. I don't want to live this way. I don't want to kill myself. I don't want to drink. You know, what do you got for me? And so I make a beginning on this thing. I had all the problems with God that I've talked about in here, and then you guys helped me with that. And parallel to that, I was experiencing the first couple of years in here, I really was experiencing the power of the fellowship. There really is a power in this room with us. You know, I mean, I was having spiritual experiences going bowling with you people. You know, who knew this was fun, you know? And doing all these first things and learning that I can dance, learning that I can appreciate music, learning, you know, that maybe I have another career that I'd like to do and I could explore, I can go to school, I could do all these world of possibilities just opened up. And I knew that I was going to have to eventually tell somebody where I'd been and what I'd done. And I had those things like Graham was talking about. I had things that, and we get into it in the next paragraph, but I had things that I swore I would never, ever tell another living soul. Many of them I was sure, you know, there were no witnesses. So I really felt that I could pull it off. And so I really postponed this. I didn't postpone the fifth step because once I had actually, you know, experienced the pain of not doing the inventory and then went down and did the inventory, I couldn't wait to get rid of it, you know. I mean, there was a part of me that was, when I was driving over there to my sponsor's house, there was a part of me that thought, when I do this, he may shoot me, you know. He may rid the planet of me. Certainly at least asked me to wash the chair before I left, you know. But I put off that fourth step. I wouldn't do the inventory like Graham. But suddenly the dust bunnies on the back of the refrigerator coil need to be taken care of. You know, anything other than, you know, I even started paying bills, you know. So there it is. I mean, it was really only the pain of not doing it that propelled me into doing it. The line I see here, and I know much more about this than I did then. But this line about a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. I really have learned today that I can't see myself accurately. Mm-hmm. I just cannot see myself accurately. I've got to, when we get it down on paper and we start looking at the things that he asks us to look at, like we talked about last week. I live in column B. You know, you stepped on my toes, and here's all the things you did wrong, and here's the stuff I'm scared of, and I just live in that. And then the rest of that inventory invites me out into what I had done, what was my part, where I've been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, frightened. Those are all unnatural acts for me to look at. But if I can get there, just doing the work, then it's almost natural after that to just talk to somebody else about it. So solitary self-appraisal, absolutely insufficient for me. I do not want to drink again. And the other thing that I want to notice about what you read, too, is that they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. And sometimes when I go to AA, I don't mean to be critical of AA, but I get confused sometimes in AA meetings. Sometimes I think when I leave a meeting, I need to be more honest. I need to be more fearless. I need to be more humble. I need to exert myself to be those things. And that's the cart before the horse in my experience. If I can just pony up the willingness to do this step, then I'm going to have an experience with humility and an experience with fearlessness and an experience with honesty. So, again, the simple battle cry for me is just, am I willing to do this action?
Okay. We're going to continue on page 73. And with more than most people, page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. And we touched on this already to some extent. But this idea of the double life. See, what I want to do is, I want to read that stuff in the book and apply it to when I was drinking. But that's not what it says. It does not say, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life when he was drinking. It just says he leads a double life. And that's been my experience. And part of the struggle for me in recovery has been that I confuse a spiritual way of life with being good. Whatever that means. And being good means I have to behave in these certain ways. And there are ways that are impossible for me to ever behave. But I won't admit that. So now I've set myself up where I have to be perfect. And I especially need everybody to like me. That's number one. And everybody else to think I'm perfect. So what I do is, what I did was I took the actions in the big book, went through them with my sponsor, and then with big book under my arm, set about judging everyone in AA as not doing the actions as good as me. So meanwhile, my non-AA life is starting to resemble my life when I was drinking. But now I'm going to AA meetings, but what I'm doing when I'm not at AA, really all that's missing is the booze. And that's a very uncomfortable place to be. And really, like David said, the pain of being in that place really drove me back to revisit the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor. So this idea that I have this stage character, this is the way I want people to perceive me. A nice guy, a good guy, a kind guy, a funny guy, all these different things that I want to project onto other people. And but deep down inside, doing stuff that's inconsistent with that and trying to cover it up. Because I know really, that if you really knew what I was like and what I was really doing, you wouldn't even want to talk to me. You would be disgusted with me, because I'm disgusted with me for doing these things. And that's really a very uncomfortable place for me to be. And just this idea of trying to push these memories away and not even think about them anymore. I've certainly spent a lot of time doing that. So that inconsistency for me is untenable. I can't stay there indefinitely. It gets so uncomfortable that what I have to do is I have to get some relief from it somehow. And there's really several ways we can get relief. We talked a lot about them last week. I can move country. I can buy a bunch of stuff that I don't need. I can eat a dozen donuts. I can chase women or whatever. You know, there's lots of different ways that I can try to change the way I feel. But the one that really does it is drinking and taking some drugs. That really hits the spot. So I need to be very careful with this, and I need to be vigilant that I'm actually, that this double life, my experience is if I let up on the steps and the simple actions of AA, the double life starts to get traction again. I don't think I've ever not had some sort of double life, to be honest with you. I think my life is more single than it's ever been at the moment, but there's certain episodes where it's like, woo, you know, we go way off. Oh my goodness, you better get back over here. You know, in certain areas of life. And usually it's driven by resentment, fear, and sex. It's usually in those areas that it really pops out. So it's good to know this. And again, it comes back to this idea that I'm on a daily basis being honest with somebody about what's really going on. That seems to take some of the power out of it.
Yeah, the fifth step seems to get a little bit harder, you know, because my last few inventories that I've confessed have been all things that I've done stone cold sober. You know, it's easy to blame drinking on a lot of these things. I'm very much the actor. I very much lead the double life. I've all my life, and I've shared this here before, but all my life I have tried to appear competent to whatever the situation is around me. You know, yeah. I know, wherever I find myself, I have a little mental process. What are these people doing? What do they want? What do I show them? How can I appear competent? And so that's just the way my mind naturally works. That's not a decision. I don't wake up and decide I'm going to map out the day based on the characters I'm going to play. But I just naturally try to fit myself to the situation. And I would invent characters in a bar room. I have a vague recollection of talking to a guy, and I was brought up short because he said, "You don't play the bass at all, do you, David?" And I went, because I was talking to a bass player, and I was telling him I was in a band, and for no good purpose. I mean, other than that's what I think I want to be tonight. So as the drinking progresses and the drinking continues, then things get more absurd, and the words that he uses there, he's revolted by certain episodes. He vaguely remembers. Those words are very accurate for me. I'm absolutely appalled and disgusted with the things that I'm capable of saying and doing under the influence. And I absolutely tremble. Oh, my God, you know, what happened? Oh, gee, where the last place I was, and who could have seen me do that? And, you know, and then I got to shuffle off to work and maybe make some resolutions. I'm never gonna drink again. I'm gonna go back to college, I think. That's what I need to do. You know, because I don't want to live this way anymore. So this cycle of fear and tension, drinking, more double life, more absurd behavior, more trying to manage it and control it on my own. So fear and tension. I've got nothing left but to drink. That's all I have on that.
Page 75. When we decide, on page 75, right at the top there. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And I've pretty much just done my fifth steps with sponsors I've had. I've had a bunch of sponsors. I've moved a lot, and sponsors move as well, so... I've done quite a lot of fifth steps, and, you know, it's just a case of the guy's willing to give me his time. And probably the first one was the one that, in some ways, left the biggest impression on me. And, you know, my story tale was told, and then the guy just sort of looked at me and he said, you know what, it sounds to me like you really are an alcoholic, and it sounds to me like you need AA just like I do. And that was really what he said to me, you know, that really seemed to help me with that at that time, because that just that feeling of being different. We talked all day. I remember that. We talked for a long, long time. And this idea, again, it emphasizes that I can't withhold anything. Now, it then goes on to what they sometimes call the fifth step promises, after the fifth step's done. And... I have to tell you, you know, I can't pinpoint one exact moment when I had the sort of burning bush or physical sensation that, you know, the drink problem was lifted. But really, when I was engaged in the steps, step four and step five, I haven't had a serious desire to drink since then. You know, I've had fleeting thoughts at certain times in recovery of alcohol, but I've never had a serious desire to drink. And I believe it's because I took the steps. I'd already stopped drinking, and the steps are there to help me to stay stopped, you know, and that's been my experience. So I still wasn't very clear on the spiritual beliefs or having a spiritual experience, but looking back in hindsight, as so much of this is, I think I had some pretty unrealistic expectations for a spiritual experience, which I've shared with you guys before. It would be maybe the clouds opening and a big booming voice saying, Graham, this is God, you know? Something like that would satisfy my desire for drama and to be very, very, very special and important. And instead, the spiritual experience seems to be in a much more subtle thing. Like, number one, I didn't want to drink anymore. Was that not why I went to AA? Because drink was killing me and all that goes with it. So that's pretty huge, but I'll just minimize that. Oh yeah, whatever, you know. So it actually has worked, but it's not the way I imagined it would be. It's a much gentler, more subtle thing. And this idea of having some peace of mind and being at ease with myself, I definitely started to experience that. It took me a long time to realize that's what I was experiencing, because I'd never experienced it before. Because I spent my whole life up here at 200 miles an hour, like, you know, terrified angry and terrified. That was really my two emotions. So, and this bit about being on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I think what started to happen to me was I started to feel more a part of AA. You know, coming to AA and not doing the steps. You know. You know, and David was talking about being in the fellowship and staying sober on fellowship. We all, you know, we may have done that, we may not have done that. We know people that are doing that. That's fine. Have an experience with that. But I really started to feel like when I was doing the steps, I started to feel a closeness with people in AA who were also doing the steps that I hadn't really experienced before. I'm somebody that's a loner. I'm always alone. I'm always with me, thinking about me and how I feel and how I've been wronged. That's my default mode. And now, having done this step, I started to feel like, you know, I could look my sponsor in the eye. He knew absolutely everything about me, all of it, absolutely everything. For the first time in my life, there was somebody that knows everything about me, absolutely everything. And he is still talking to me, and he still likes me, and he told me that he loves me. And we went and had dinner with him and his wife, and then we went to a meeting together. And that is really the compassion that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous have shown me. Because if you're going to judge me, if you're going to judge me out of AA, if you're going to judge me for this stuff, I have to leave. If I can't trust you, if I can't trust God, that it's all right that I've done these things and that I can still live sober, if I can't do that, then I have to leave AA. So that's what I found here. I found non-judgmental love. And I didn't know what it was, but that's what that is. So I need to be careful today when I'm working with people and when I'm in groups to try the best I can not to be judging people for what they're doing or what they're not doing. It's none of my business. And I don't want to be judged. And probably that, as much as anything, is what saved my life, is the non-judgmentalism of people in Alcoholics Anonymous on an ongoing basis. Because I'm going to keep screwing up. I'm going to keep doing stuff I shouldn't do. I'm going to keep not doing stuff I should do. But that's okay. We're all doing it. So why are we pretending we're not doing it? Oh, look at that guy. He's really sick. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. I'm goody two-shoes. I'm goody two-shoes. Really? I don't buy it. Give it 5 years and we'll see.
Yeah, I love this. We pocket our pride and go for it. And really, this is the beginning of the end of the double life. You know, this just bursts that whole thing. If I sit down with another human being and lay it all out, then I'm not in a double life. At least in that relationship, there's somebody else there who knows the truth about me. And that first one, we went back to his garage, back behind his house, and sat there among his carpentry tools. And, you know, it was just one of those things, because I hate myself. I don't have any good skills, and I'm looking around. Wow, I wish I was a guy who could work with these carpenter tools, you know. I'd be able to make furniture and useful things. I suck, you know. But I went through it. I did it. I did the inventory. I did the fifth step. I laid it out. I read it. I didn't want to do it. I was scared to do it. And I just did it. And things that I had been carrying around for years, those things that I was going to take to my grave, those things that are just abhorrent and disgusting to me, even today, to think about them, seems like a whole nother life. But I gave them to that man, and I had the exact same experience. He matched my inconsistencies with his own. He told his own stories. The details were different, but he had the same sort of sexual difficulties, the same sort of honesty issues, the same sort of fears. He was also afraid to be alone and afraid of people. I never met anybody. I just learned that about myself a few moments before that. So I left there what I believe to be reconciled with the human race. Or I had that feeling. I did begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. I felt peace. I do know what it's like to feel, to be alone at peace and ease. And I have those moments today. Not all the time. But I've come to see that peace as an indicator that inventory needs to be done. When I'm just human doing, just busying myself, not really wanting to sit down with myself and listen to my own, you know, when I'm avoiding myself. It's time to write. So, yeah, and I'm the same way. There was no burning bush, nothing like that. I just all of a sudden felt a part of AA. I felt like I could look you guys in the eye. You know, I felt I had a right to the chair that I was sitting in an AA meeting. All kinds of things just changed in that moment. But man, when we get here, that ponderous chain that I had dragged around, you know, it felt so good to just let that go, just to give that up. And yeah, and thank God that guy didn't shoot me or ask me to wash the chair. He hugged me, he told me he loved me. And he told me he was the same.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 75. Returning home. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So, I was told to do this after we'd taken the step together, and just to do it that day, you know, because that's what it says in the book, so let's just do what it says. So, at this point, I was, with the first guy, I went home and said the prayers and stuff, but a subsequent guy who'd helped me with the big book, he sort of gave me a list of stuff that I was asking to have removed. So he'd identified some patterns in the fifth step. You know, big surprise, one of them was selfishness, you know. Another one is this habit I have of using people. So what that looks like is I'll call you up and be your BFF. It's so long as you've got something I want, but as soon as I get it, then you don't hear from me for 6 months, and then I come back into your life when I want something again. And I've made amends to my own sisters, and they, in their own words, told me that that's what I'm like. Sober, I'm like that. And I don't even know I'm doing it. It's just normal to me. Why call you? I don't need anything from you. You know, I'm busy. So I have a list, you know, my selfish sex conduct, fear, pride, bags of pride in there, puffing myself up with pride. And this has been probably some of the most, I don't know if moving's the right word, but it's me in a room of my own typically, and I'm down on my knees and I'm praying to God. And remember, at this time in early, when I first came to AA, I didn't even really believe in God. I did this, and the reason I did it is because I'm really screwed up, and when I drink, it gets really, really bad, and I don't want to be like that anymore, and I can't seem to not do that on my own, and these guys have successfully done it for a long time. I want to be like them, so I'll just do this. So I don't even really believe. And how can I have faith and trust in something that I just don't really know anything about? So I'm just taking the action. I'm down on my knees and I'm getting the book out. I'm reading the first 5 steps. I'm reading the step out and saying, God, have I left anything out of this step? Do I really believe I'm an alcoholic? What does that really mean for me? You know? Do I really believe AA can restore me to sanity regarding the first drink? Do I believe my life's unmanageable? Just trying to get these key ideas and asking God, you know, if there's anything I missed, let me know. You know? So, because I don't want to screw this up. I want this to work for me too. And just sort of bringing that to the table and trying to take that hour like it says.
And, you know, just like in the third step, I read that for the longest time, you know, take away my difficulties so that I feel better. relieve me of the bondage of self so that I feel better. Because God knows that's really all I want out of this thing. I just want to feel better. And that's what I wanted out of drinking. And so I do this fifth step, and I have this wonderful experience on the drive home. Like, I can look the world in the eye again. You know, I do feel better. And then this very next paragraph reminds me, oh, yeah, by the way, we can thank God that we know him better. You know, we can give up a little gratitude there because it didn't come from me, and it's not for me. You know, so we give thanks. And And I have, I'll confess my nerdiness, I have gone home, put the book on the shelf, then taken it down off the shelf. Just because I'm anal like that. I want to have this experience. So, but as we carefully review the five proposals, and I think, you know, it was pointed out to me, he's just talking about the steps there, and he goes back to that building analogy, and I love that because I got an engineering mind, you know, and he sets up that spiritual structure all through the book. You know, we talk about this foundation of complete willingness and the admission of defeat, and the simple cornerstone of belief in a higher power. And then that darn keystone in there, again, my attitude about God in the third step. So he's asking me to look at that. You know, we're building this arch that we're going to walk through. And so I got to go back. My sponsor today is absolutely, he's a man of few words. And he's got several phrases that he's used with me 1,000 times. And one of them is, it sounds like a step one problem, David. Mm-hmm. Bam. And I'm back there again, managing control of my life and trying to exert my will and my power. Playing God, you know, jumping back in the director's chair. So it's just inviting me, before we proceed, you just had this wonderful experience, David, before we proceed, do you know why we're here? Are you powerless over alcohol? Is your life unmanageable? Something other than you going to solve this problem? You still are willing to rededicate yourself to turning your will and your life over to the care of the Father and continue this journey? If I can answer yes to those questions, then we proceed.
Okay, page 76, right up at the top. So we're now moving on to step 6, right? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. So, you know, there's so much in the step 6 discussion in Alcoholics Anonymous. And a lot of times what I hear in the meetings, this is what I hear, this is not necessarily what people are saying. But this is what I hear is, I'm going to work on my character defects. Okay? So at the root of that, I love that. I'm like, yeah, me too. I'm working on my character defects as well. Because see, what that means to me, to Einstein over here, is I can actually make myself good by using God to make myself good. So it's like, God, this is what I'm going to look like. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to, and a big list of stuff that I'm going to be. So now let's do it, baby. And as David just pointed out, my whole problem, my whole life has been that I secretly act like I'm God. That's my great delusion, is that if I just manage things, I can basically be whatever I want to be. I can change myself. And if I could change myself, why on earth would I be sitting in an AA meeting in Norfolk, Virginia tonight? I would have changed myself. I would have stopped drinking, growing up, and being a good boy. But I cannot do that, and I can't do it just because I'm sober. And that really upsets me, because it looks like I need a power greater than me. It looks like I need whatever God is, but I don't really understand that. So that's the problem that I bring to the table. But anyway, it talks about being willing, and it talks about these objectionable things. So I think this, for me, has been a process. And again, it's that very simple prayer. God, please help me to be willing to let go of X, fill in the blank.
Yeah, I mean, it was explained to me very succinctly that the reason these paragraphs are short is because David's not doing the heavy lifting in these steps. All David's job, he mentions willingness again, and that willingness is hope for me. It's always, it always comes back to that to me. If I can pony up the willingness, every, you know, God seems to put the track in front of the train. I seem to hear the things that I need to hear. I seem to meet the people that I need to meet. I just have to be willing today, just for today, to go forward with this thing. So it's just, it's, there's simple instructions in there, you know. Am I willing to let God have these, my selfishness, have my fear, have my lust, have my greed, have my low self-esteem? God knows I've suffered. Am I willing to let him have that stuff? And maybe there's stuff I want to hang on to. And it gives me an out for that too. God, help me be willing to let go of these things. Then I can proceed.
Page 76. Just continuing. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I'm now willing that it should evolve me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We've then completed step 7. So, you know, this is all part of a process, and I a lot of times have made this self-determined objective of how I'm going to be and what God's going to do and how God's going to make me. And the other thing is that I like to put value judgments on things. And what I mean by that is I say, this part of me is good, but this part of me is bad. I like this part of me, I hate that part of me. And what I want is to feel comfortable all the time. And I'm going to tell God to get rid of all these things that I think are bad. But listen to this. When I came to AA, the original meetings I was going to, there was 4 people there, and one of them was a really hot 22-year-old girl called Andrea who used to wear shorts to the meeting. She used to wear these little shorts, and I was going to the meetings, and this is what was going through my head. If I stay sober in AA, she'll date me. And I used to just go to the meeting and look at her legs. Now, I could sit here and say, well, that's terrible. You lustful freak. You know, that's creepy. Ugh. But that may have been the thing that kept me going to AA for those first 6 months, and that's a thing I want God to take away. Or my resentfulness, which causes me at times a great deal of pain, or my fear. I want all these things gone. But they might be the very things that are actually saving me by creating pain in my life so that I keep coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and I keep seeking whatever God is. So isn't that weird? And then as we go further on in the steps, that shameful, horrible thing that was destroying me and all these horrible, seedy little disgusting things that I did, those lies that I told, those things that I stole, the time I stole from my grandmother, all of that stuff, those are the very things that when I, in the right situation, share them with another alcoholic, can actually bring him across the bridge into recovery. They're the most powerful, useful things that I have. The bits about myself that I despise may actually be the most useful things that I have. What about that? And I'm begging God to take them away. Why? Because they make me feel uncomfortable. And I'll finish with these 2 things. I have a sponsor told me, Graham, you're a really screwed up guy. The sooner you accept that, the happier you're going to be in AA. Whoa, wait a minute. No. That's not how this works. I'm getting cured and I'm going to be good and spiritual.
Yeah.
Okay, really? And then, the other thing that he would talk about as well is he would talk about the gorilla. And some of you guys have heard this before. And he was talking specifically about character defects. And he would say, Graham, have you ever had sex with a gorilla? And I'd say, no, I haven't had sex with a gorilla. Where's the punchline? And he would say, well, when you're having sex with a gorilla, it's not done till he's over. It's not over till he's done. And I don't like that about character defects. What if I'm always resentful, lustful, dishonest, and all these things? What if this right now, the way I am right now, is as good as I ever get? Well, there you are. That's it. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, sometimes not at all. This is me. The way I am right now, I'm very imperfect and flawed, but that doesn't mean that I can't be helpful to people. And that's what I need to keep an eye on. I'm going to fail every day, but that doesn't mean I can't trust and have faith that I can continue on this path, that we can all continue together. So I'm broken and I'm here and I'm flawed and I'm here, and I think you all are too. I like to judge you in my mind, by the way, but so I think we're all pretty much the same, and that's sort of comforting to know that it's not just me.
Yeah, I mean, in working with others, absolutely every single thing that I can think of that I tried for years to hide from everyone, all those events, all those shameful, abhorrent things, I don't fit step in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in public, but I will tell you that one-on-one with other men, there have been occasions where every single one of those events has needed to come out, where you brought something to the table, I needed to bring mine too, you know? So every single one of those weird things, disgusting things, have had a purpose and a place, without exception. And the struggles as well. And I wanted to clean something up on the fifth step too, and it's not in the book, but it's part of my experience, and it was done with me, and I practice it when I listen to fifth steps. At the end of the thing, when it's done, the man just asked me, is there anything that didn't fit in the inventory that's killing you, that you want to leave with me? And when he did that, I didn't have anything. You know, I mean, it really had made it all onto the inventory. But I've since it's now part of my experience, when I'm here in a fifth step, I'll finish with that. 9 times out of 10, no, you've got everything. But 1 out of 10 times, there's something there, something significant there. I've had the honor of hearing a bunch of fifth steps, and I've heard about, you know, well, I'm not going to give anybody the details, but amazing things come out of that, just that simple question. Is there anything that's bugging you that you're sitting on right now? So this prayer, you know, when ready, and of course we got ready in the other paragraph, the invitation is, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, warts and all. I don't have to get good to go to God, right? I don't have to be a good credit application to go to God. I can go to God. Take me now the way I am. Once again, I pray for you to remove from me every single defect of character so I feel better. No. Stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. This is the purpose. You know that I'm weak, so grant me the strength as I go out from here, once again, to do your will. Step 3, right? Back to that keystone idea over and over and over again. So, yeah, I'm perfectly flawed. I remain so today. I don't feel the pain of a double life. There are... Graham talked about the pure utility of just having people that you can trust, that you can talk to. And there are several men that in this world that know everything there is to know about me at this moment. And I can look in the eye and tell you that's true. Are we done? Is that
We're
us?
Done.
All right. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. The Simple Actions group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? There's literature available on the table outside. Please see any home group member after the meeting for help with that. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor raise your hand? In closing, I'd like to thank everyone who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza. And is someone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Okay, it's recorded.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you for reading.
Thank you all for coming. Let's close the meeting. Irene, would you lead us?
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That's the best. That's the last, my first experience.